Welcome to The Geek and Review, the podcast focused on innovative and creative ideas in the legal profession. I'm Marlene Gebauer.
And I'm Greg Lambert. Marlene, we did a little bit of traveling last week. I think I went to Chicago. You went to New York.
I did.
What all did you cover in New York?
Well, I actually went to New York. We were doing listening sessions with many of our attorney groups, which I think was really excellent. Got a lot of great feedback. And I also caught up with some of the folks at LexFusion who were also having a meeting there. So that was quite nice, too. We got to see our friend Zach and a few other people there.
Nice. You also caught some music, didn't you?
I did. I went to the See Here Now concert in one of my favorite places, Asbury Park, and got to see lots and lots of bands right out there on the beach. So got to catch up with some friends, and so all good.
Oh, good. Well, I did the...
So tell us about Chicago.
Oh, yeah. I did the Legal Value Network meeting, conference. It was awesome. And met up with a lot of friends, Toby, Ryan, and Zena, our close friends, as well as I had a good panel. We actually did the closing panel. I caught a little bit of music, too, except it was kind of the other way around in that we all went out for karaoke, and we did live band karaoke, and that was really cool.
Is it really music, though?
Yeah.
Or is it just sounds?
when you've had enough drinks, it's music.
Sounds great. Yes, exactly right.
Before we get into this week's guest, I did want to give a shout out to Karen Osterley from PLI for launching PLI's new The Practicing Law Librarian podcast. And that's practicing with an S, the way that Practicing Law Institute does. Yeah, it's a limited series available on pli.edu, and it's available there or any of the podcast platforms. Great content so far that I've seen, including some good friends like Cornell Winston, Elaine Neck, and more. So it's a great spot for information professionals to stay connected and learn from one another. So great job, Karen.
Today we're focusing on search, and our guests are experts in this regard. Sorry. I'm just nervous about it. Paulina Granarva, CEO and founder, and Yana Kilcher, CTO and founder of DeepJudge, a semantic search engine for legal documents. Paulina and Yannick, welcome to the Geek & Review.
Thanks for having us.
Hi, Marlene. Hi, Craig. Thanks a lot for having us. It's great to be here.
So the first question I wanted to ask is, as ex-Googlers, how did your experience at Google shape the development of DeepJudge's AI models? What specific expertise did you gain there?
Yeah, I think our backgrounds play a big role into what models we're using, but also the problems that we choose to solve. I think one thing that is kind of interesting about the DeepJudge team is that all three co-founders actually have a pretty technical background. So all of us worked at Google for quite some time, and we actually worked on the Google Search and Google Assistant. In parallel, we also did a PhD in artificial intelligence at TTU Zurich in Switzerland, where we are based. And we very much focused on semantic understanding of text and generative models. And we were super lucky that during this period when we were both at Google and at ETH, kind of experienced the wave of what deep learning can do when it comes to semantic understanding of text. And we experienced this as part of academia, but also as part of industry. And we recognized the inflection point, and we decided to take it to the legal domain, where there's obviously a lot of text and a lot of potential to optimize things. And it's really the perfect domain because a lot of the text is written by humans for humans. And we kind of, with the knowledge of what we have been building before, we analyzed the market, and we decided to actually go towards the holy grail, which is connecting users to the full institutional knowledge inside the law firm. It was super interesting to us because, when you think about it, the true competitive power of a law firm is really the entire knowledge that they have accumulated over the years. And when you hire a big law firm or a lawyer from a big law firm, you really expect them to leverage all of that and build on top of all of the previous experiences. But it was really shocking for us to learn that what actually happens instead is that people would send PTI emails kind of inquiring across the entire firm, has anyone ever done this before? Where this can be, you're nodding. Yeah, everybody says this. When you know, this is either a clause or have you ever had a case like this before, instead of really looking internally. So we decided to actually do this and now do search again, but now in a more internal fashion where we really connect the users and we enable all their institutional knowledge to be accessible at their fingerprints.
Yeah, that unfortunately is not a shock to any of us knowledge management people that have been trying for 25 years to get them to clean up their information and being able to, you know, use best practices, reuse the documents that you've already created, stop starting over from scratch. So, yeah, welcome to the club. So.
Yeah. Yeah, Yannick, what was your experience?
I think we just learned building large things or things that serve a large amount of people. Google needs to respond within 200 milliseconds, so there's really no room for, you know, diddling around and not making things that scale really well. And I mean, a law firm isn't the whole world, but they do have usually terabytes of data. So being able to effectively handle that is something that we certainly learned in this industry environment, much more than in academia.
Yeah. And I just found out today that I think tomorrow is Google's 25th anniversary of...
Wow.
And yeah, it's hard to believe it's only been 25 years, and it's hard to believe it's been 25 years. So it's kind of this weird weirdness there. So, you know, Deep Judge itself uses the proprietary AI technology to enable the semantic search for legal documents. And so, you know, we talked about knowledge management and how we've been working with things such as, you know, traditional keyword search, prior versions of semantic search, natural language search, enterprise search. You know, there's been a hodgepodge of different types of searching available. So either one of you, do you mind talking about, you know, how the technology works with Deep Judge and how it makes it superior than all those traditional searches?
Yeah, we avoid calling it semantic search by now because it's kind of an overused term nowadays.
So what do you call it now?
We just call it search.
Search.
Semantic search nowadays kind of means vector search, and that has its advantages, especially with the newer generation of language models. You can get really great embeddings for text, and then you can search by sort of concepts inside that text. But it's useful for some stuff, and that's why, you know, if you go into developing this, the first demo you'll see is like, you can search Amazon product reviews. And that's great, because Amazon product reviews, they're like, it's broken, it's great, or I never got it, or something like this. And so this is all semantics, right? But if you want to find like a name of a person, you really want that name. You don't want a semantically similar name. You want that name, or you want some time period, or so you need to essentially take what's good about, you know, tried and true enterprise search and all of that, and you need to augment it with these newer technologies rather than doing one or the other or something of that. So that's how the best search engines work, and that's what we do.
So what would be some examples of if I'm sitting down and using Deep Judge to look at my data, what would I need to know differently? It's kind of like we've talked a lot this past year about the difference between searching and prompting, and so how do I go about digging through the information and using something like Deep Judge, you know, more properly?
It's really interesting, because we feel people have gotten so used to Google that if you show them a search engine that works, they're like, oh yeah, of course. So it's more like the search that exists right now inside of law firms really doesn't work. Really, you have to either be a super expert at combining really big operator chains, or you just have to scroll through hundreds of search results to find one that you want. So a search engine where you just type in what you want to find and it actually gives that to you, that's what your experience is very much like Google, but internally. So that means we take a step back and we try to understand what are you actually looking for. And in that, you don't exactly have to hit, you know, the exact words that you type. It's not that important that they exactly match. And that, first of all, allows you to be more precise, meaning that all of the kind of crap doesn't get returned. And second of all, it means that you're also going to find stuff that someone else maybe used some different words to describe. So it's not exactly prompting. It's more like you type what you want to find, and we take care of not only finding it, but also, I mean, there's on top of that, there's a lot of crap in and of itself. And by crap, we mean stuff that you maybe don't want to find, like tons of redline documents, tons of, you know, like emails where it's just, hey, you want to go for lunch? Okay. And you want to save all of this and you want to have it searchable. But when you search for something, you ideally want the search engine that understands, okay, this is a red line. That's not important right now. These 10 documents are actually the same document. So I'll only show it to you once. So all of this kind of things is things that we would handle.
So all the hard work is done in the indexing and on the back end.
Mm-hmm.
Correct. Yes. There is a, obviously, we're deeply, you know, impressed by people who want to organize their data. And we know that especially in knowledge management, that is a big topic. How do we organize our knowledge? And that certainly helps. But usually that's done for the knowledge collection, which is super cool. But then you still have all the actual matter documents and all the actual communication and everything that goes in there. And there's just... it's just a Herculean task to keep that organized. So you'd rather have a good search engine.
So you have an impressive group of advisors, including former executives from Recommind and Kira Systems. How have they helped DeepJudge's product development and go-to-market strategy?
Yeah, I think we benefit quite a lot from having them on board. So we have Jan Putzika, who is the founder and CTO of Recommind, up until the acquisition by OpenText, and he has built a search engine for law firms himself. So leveraging his knowledge is really, really valuable to us. And we work very closely with him when developing the product. We also have Steve Obensky, who was the previous chief strategy officer at Kira, who is helping us really greatly with go-to-market, deciding which problems to tackle, how to present them and bring them to the world. And now, obviously, with the US expansion.
Yeah, actually, that's, I think, how we were connected was through Steve.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Well, in addition to the advisory board that you have, I know that you also have collaborated with a number of organizations. And so, Pauline, could you share some of the examples of some of these successful projects or partnerships that that you've used or that have used DeepJudge as solutions?
Yeah, certainly. As a startup, it takes a village to build a business. So we leverage a lot of partnerships. And I think they can roughly fall into three different categories. The first one are kind of a lot of financial support. So the ecosystem of startups in Switzerland is very lively. So we've been lucky to receive a lot of awards, a lot of grants, partner up with a lot of institutions. And that is great for both kind of traction, but also as financial support. The second type of partnership is more the strategic type. So we are part of the ETH AI Center. We're in fact the first spin-off to come out of the ETH AI Center, which is one of the largest hubs for AI research worldwide. And through that, we leverage a lot of the talent and kind of information flow. Another strategic partnership we have is with Microsoft, for example. We are part of their exclusive Pegasus program for startups, which means that we get early access to all of their models. We get access to cloud architects, cloud computing. So all of it, all of which is really beneficial to us. And probably the most valuable partnership type that we have is with the customers themselves. So when we decided to build Knowledge Search, we built it very closely together with the law firms that we are working with. And I think that was super important because we learned a lot of different features and things that we added on top, some of which Yannick mentioned before. So for instance, we learned that obviously as a search, it's super important to bring the relevant result at the top. But then also what is super important is how do you organize and present the results themselves. So this comes in the form of recognizing what is a red line or recognizing what is an email. So maybe you can very easily remove that, or organizing duplicates, near duplicates version, because you don't want to see the same result on the first three pages just because it's slightly different. And another big one that we actually learned through our partnerships with law firms is the ability to recognize whether a result is relevant or not very quickly, not just by the content, but also by all the metadata surrounding it. And while there's a lot of metadata already in the document management system in place and other places, we learned that even though when you upload a document and you need to select what type of document it is, almost no one really does it. It's always the default type that is doc. And that's not really helpful. So what we do is we have our own classifiers that add a lot of metadata to the collection. So for instance, if you have even just very few labels by the very good souls that actually select the correct document type, we can extend that to the entire collection. Or we can classify out of the box what type of document it is. Is it a contract? Is it something else? If it is a contract, what type of contract it is? We have a classifier of over, I think, 400 different classes that tells you the type of contract this document belongs in. And this is very good for narrowing down the results and being really specific when you're searching for something.
I'm just curious, does it learn as people use the system so that if the certain searches return certain documents and then within the results, there's kind of favorites that people tend to always go to, does that change the search results as time goes by?
As time goes by, but it's if you're a public search engine like Google or Bing or so, you get I don't know how many million impressions a day. In a law firm, even in a big law firm, you maybe get a few hundred or a few thousand a day. So it takes a while to accumulate enough data to be able to robustly learn from it. Our strategy is to mix metrics of quantitative assessment, such as that, like what do users click on, what do they actually look at, when are they happy, when are they unhappy, and more qualitative measures where we actually go and sit with the people and ask them about, you know, what they're looking for, why, and what they're looking to achieve and then improve by that.
Can they actually kind of see how it's working, like behind the scenes in terms of like how it classifies the way it classifies or the results that it's given?
Some of it is certainly visible. We expose obviously all the metadata that we infer about documents. A lot of the internals of search engines are also hidden, meaning just the computation, the relevances and so on. They would be not too meaningful, or people would start to read wrong things into the numbers where they're like, we had too many numbers at one point. We had like the relevance as a number. And then people would be like, no, this result, that's not 85. That's like 99. And we're like, that's really only important whether it's higher or lower than something else. So we're now trying to sort of give more visual indication of relevance. But so we try to expose as much as is useful.
Now, Yannick and Paulina, you know, your team's expertise in AI research is quite impressive. What is your manner in terms of staying in the forefront of AI advancements? And how does this expertise benefit DeepJudge's users?
I think we obviously keep very tight with our upbringings, let's say, from academia and from the big industry labs. So we still are very connected with people in both places. So I think we keep up to date naturally through diffusion in there. There is quite big buzzes in this field, and it's hard to, I mean, it's easy to get overwhelmed, but if something good, big is happening, it's also hard to miss it. So we make big efforts to stay up to date on anything that's relevant to us so we can get it to the customers in the fastest manner possible. I think the current research environment is really special in that there's never been such a small gap between what's state of the art and what you can actually put into productive use. We try to make the maximum benefit out of that. So whenever there is anything new, we immediately try it out and we immediately look for a way, if it is actually working, some research results to bring it into the product or apply it.
And that's something, I guess, that's sort of disseminated or you know, it is, and the team is encouraged to go seek that knowledge out as well.
Yeah, we have our internal channels are going with people discussing research and finding things.
It also helps that Yannick is kind of at the center of all of it with his YouTube channel. So yeah, he has a YouTube channel discussing
work. We're going to get to the YouTube channel.
Yeah, Yannick, get revved up because we're going to talk about the YouTube channel here in a minute. So, Pauline, I read that you're growing the team, you know, internationally, that you've hired Christina Gottfried, and you've got another key hire that you're going to be announcing soon in the U.S. So how are you finding the reception in law firms and in departments? Is there a difference between the U.S. and other countries that you're finding?
That's a great question. It's really interesting that law firms started reaching out to us, and we figured that the same problem translates pretty much everywhere. Similarly, as you were nodding, everybody is kind of telling us we've been waiting for a tool that really works for kind of when it comes to search and knowledge management for years. So in terms of the problems, we are not finding any differences, really. I think there are differences in the law firms themselves. Obviously, the largest law firms in the U.S. are significantly larger than the ones we have, say, in Switzerland. And that comes with some other differences in terms of the structure. So, for instance, there are specific people and even teams that are dealing with knowledge management and even people responsible for search. I think another interesting aspect is that a lot of the large U.S. firms, they would have also data scientists themselves. They're playing around and building different models, which is also super interesting for us because then we get to kind of work together and build other things on top of the search and on top of the data that we expose to them. So pretty excited about the U.S. expansion.
I wonder, are we using our data scientists correctly? how are you finding that law firms that have data scientists are putting them to use in a good way? I guess, and let me ask it that way.
Yeah, I was going to say we've definitely seen some great examples of people playing around with the models, which helps them kind of understand the limitations of the models and the things that you can do with the models. And I think that knowledge is pretty helpful also for them to know what they can build internally themselves and what they should look for in a vendor. So, yeah.
Yannick, could you provide insights into any recent developments or updates to DeepJudge's products that the users can look forward to?
Sure. We have lots of updates and things that we're working on. Currently, I think obviously the whole world is buzzing about generative AI, and even the business world also took notice since last year or so. And in the search engine as such, we do use language models, but not the type of generative ChatGPT models, because we have to process terabytes of data and we have to search really quickly through all of that. So having a model that goes like line by line is not going to cut it for us. But what we are doing is what's called generative search, where you connect the search engine to a generative model. And so we're ourselves not like an LLM company, although we can train such models, but we connect these models to the internal data. So that has some advantages. Everyone's now looking to use generative models in legal, but if you just use them as such, they'll have hallucinations. They'll just tell you something. Even if they don't hallucinate, you have no clue where it's coming from, right? And one route is to like train a large language model on internal data, where you say, hey, we have all this great data, can we train something on it? And there's a bit of a misconception of what that will do. What it will do, at least what we know from research, is it's going to adopt your style of writing, like a bit of your language nicks and your way of phrasing sentences and so on, it's still going to have hallucinations because you just can't get around the fact that it's a statistical model. And there's other problems. Like if there's a new document tomorrow, what are you going to do? Retrain it? Like, Bloomberg spent millions on their model. It's already out of date, right? So, and even other problems, like how do you know that it's not generating something from a matter that where you are, where there's an ethical wall between you and that matter? Like the law firm is not going to train an individual LLM for each user. So all of these kind of problems you can elegantly solve by actually connecting a generative language model to a search engine. Nowadays, that's broadly known under the term of retrieval augmented generation. We go further than that. We have a much deeper integration with the search engine and the generative model. So I think we're pretty excited about that. And we can work with any generative model, like ones we train on ourselves or commercial ones, or even the ones that law firms train. If they really want, to have their style, they'll train one and it'll still be super useful, because with the search engine, you can see where all the information is coming from. And it's coming really from your own documents. And that goes back to our core philosophy that we mentioned at the beginning. We believe the internal knowledge is the competitive edge that really a firm has across, a firm versus 100 individual lawyers. The combined power and the internal knowledge is the competitive advantage. And so it just makes sense to not only connect humans to that, but also to connect generative AI to that.
As you've been implementing these within firms and working with the people inside the firms, has there been any kind of surprise or something that you've learned that the product can do that you may not have realized until you actually put it into action?
So we're noticing that some people nowadays, whenever they see a text field, they immediately think it's ChatGPT and they start to write, we do a search engine, but then they start to write, please give me a document that has, right? Yep. And we're like,
you are a third year associate.
But then there are others who, so the generative search we're currently, this is in more of an experimental phase, right? And we're really getting into the workflows of people. And we've noticed some people have actually become super well-versed at prompt engineering. Like you'd be astonished of, how well people immediately, you sit them in front of it and they'll write exactly this. They'll write, you are this is the background and so on. And we're like, wow, it's been half a year since these tools have been available and people have already adopted, very sophisticated techniques around them. So that must mean, right, there is something that people get out of these productively, which is very cool. Very cool to see.
So Paulina, you have and you mentioned both of you have a PhD. I believe it is it in AI or machine learning or both? That how do you define it?
I guess, I don't know, machine learning.
What does it say on the certificate?
It just says PhD.
Yeah, in general, in artificial intelligence, and then different fields.
So, how has your experience, the academic experience, influenced how you've developed the product and the direction that you're taking DeepJudge?
Yeah, as I said at the beginning, I think our backgrounds really shaped our journey, including what type of problems we picked to solve. And I think we picked a really difficult one just because we can solve it technically. I think, it's a tough problem because you are dealing with hundreds of millions of data, if not more. You have to be really fast and really performant when it comes to ordering up the results. But then on top of that, you're dealing with a lot of security aspects of it all, right? You cannot really sense the data to any third parties. You have to respect ethical walls and all of that. So combining all of this is a really difficult problem. And I think we decided to tackle it because of our backgrounds.
Yeah, Yannick, you have a PhD as well in AI, yes?
Correct.
Yeah. You and You also have a very strong presence on YouTube in AI research. How does your role as a content creator complement your work at DeepJudge? And do these aspects intersect in any way?
Well, they both rob my sleep. So.
Well, as podcasters, we know what you're talking about. It's a labor of love, right?
Yeah, it's been initially a hobby of mine to make a few videos about research topics. I never expected people to listen to someone explain very heavy mathy research for 45 minutes at a time. But you know, here we are. Apparently, people like it, or some people do, and. Yeah, it gives me, so I think generally being connected to people who are interested and fascinated by research is just a great thing overall. So, and I think that benefits also the company to a great degree, meaning that we're quite well connected in all of these networks, the research network, the industry network, and so on. And yeah, the YouTube channel also forces me a little bit to stay up to date on everything that's happening in the machine learning world. And
yeah, and I just looked it up just to make sure I got the numbers right. 227,000 subscribers on your YouTube channel, so not too shabby.
Damn, well done. Greg, we gotta catch up.
The community has been in large part like extremely amazing. For all the things people say about internet comments, I think this has been one of the most uplifting group of people I've ever encountered.
So, Pauline, we've gotten to the part of our interview where we ask all of our guests our crystal ball questions. So I'll start with you, and then Yannick, I'll get ask you as well. What do you think are going to be some changes or challenges in the industry, especially the future of AI development over the next 2 to 5 years? Paulina, you want to start us off?
That's a difficult question. I think, you know, I'm excited about the combination of AI plus humans. I think a lot of the talk these days is AI versus humans and whether one would replace the other. And I really think in the future that a lot of humans will be supplemented by an AI that can understand a lot more than just kind of text or visuals, but pretty much a lot of things, and supplement the work of a lot of knowledge workers in a lot of different industries.
And Yannick, what do you see in your crystal ball in the next, you know, we say 2 to 5 years, we should probably change this one to 2 to 5 months. So.
Right. I think we'll get really fed up by chat interfaces that don't really make sense because everyone's not putting them everywhere.
Yeah, I'm already fed up with chat interfaces that don't do anything.
The trend of larger and larger models continuing probably for the foreseeable future because it's like, if you have a good movie, you make a sequel because you know it's going to make money. For now, we have a pretty good idea of where we'll land if we just make these models bigger and bigger and bigger and throw more money and resources at them. So that's the current plan. In the midterm, long-term future, someone will have to come up with some sort of a smart new invention to keep that going. But that's not right now.
Very interesting.
Well,
I like that.
Yes, remains to be seen. So, Paulina Granarva, CEO and founder, and Yannick Kilcher, CTO and founder of DeepJudge. Thank you both so much for talking to us today.
Thank you very much.
Thank you as well.
And of course, thanks to all of you, our listeners, for taking the time to listen to the Geek & Review podcast. If you enjoy the show, share it with a colleague. We'd love to hear from you, so reach out to us on social media. I can be found at LinkedIn, at GabeauerM on Twitter, and at MGabeauer66 on Threads.
And I can be reached on LinkedIn or at Glambert on Twitter or GlambertPod on Threads. So, Paulina and Yannick, if someone wanted to learn more about DeepJudge or reach out, where can you be found online?
Our website, deepjudge.ai. We're also on LinkedIn. The company profile is DeepJudge. And me, myself, I can be found on LinkedIn at Paulina Granarva.
So much better than I said it.
YouTube.
YouTube.
Type attention is all you need into YouTube.
And as always, the music you hear is from Jerry David DeSica. Thank you, Jerry.
Thanks, Jerry. Marlene, did you notice I got rid of the telephone?
I did. The telephone's gone. I felt like there was something missing, and we just jumped into Jerry.
There we go. Thanks, Jerry. All right, Yannick and Pauline, thank you again.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.